Ahed Tamimi made headlines after a video showing her slapping and kicking an Israeli soldier went viral.
Is a slap an act of terrorism? Next week, a 16-year-old Palestinian girl will go on trial in an Israeli military court for a range of security offences.
Israeli officials have defended Tamimi's arrest, saying they're protecting their soldiers and stopping what they call the incitement of violence.
הסרטון שבו נראית עאיד תמימי סותרת לחייל הפך לוויראלי בכל העולם, אבל כתב האישום נגדה שהוגש השבוע מייחס לה גם עבירה של הסתה.
Days later, the army arrested her in a nighttime operation.
الفتاة الفلسطينية عهد التميمي ذات 17 عاما التي أثار صمودها في وجه قوات الاحتلال الإسرائيلية جاب كثيرين حول العالم.
This Wednesday, an Israeli military court ruled Ahed would remain in detention until her case goes to trial.
To some authorities, Ahed Tamimi is a living propaganda weapon aimed right at Israel. But Free Tamimi has become an activist rallying cry. Petitions have popped up online. Posters and protests invoke her name around the world.
These news broadcasts, focused on Ahed Tamimi, introduce the world to a Palestinian teenager who has quickly become a symbol of Palestinian resistance. Ahed was arrested at her home in the middle of the night on December 19, 2017. She marked her 17th birthday in jail at the end of January. Ahed is one child of hundreds each year who face the disorienting and unclear system of military law and detention. As Ahed's case became known around the world, I wanted to delve into the topic of child detention in the West Bank from a wider angle. I'm Emily Bell, and you're listening to Unsettled. At the beginning of March, while Ahed was still awaiting trial, we spoke with her father.
My name is Bassem Tamimi. I am from Palestine, Ramallah, Nabi Saleh village.
The Tamimi family has become internationally known for their activism, and Ahed grew up protesting alongside her family. Since 2009, the residents of the West Bank village have been organizing grassroots protests against the occupation of Palestine. Nabi Saleh residents persist in regular protests against the occupation, in spite of violence from the IDF. This can include live ammunition, skunk water, tear gas canisters, and rubber bullets. According to Bassem, since 2009, three protesters have been killed in Nabi Saleh, two of them from the Tamimi family. More than 300 people have been arrested, 200 of them under the age of 18, and around 20 under 15. The protests began after a nearby settlement seized a natural spring, the main water source for residents of Nabi Saleh.
We have just 12-hour running water weekly, which make a water problem inside the village. We pay the price five times more than the settler for each cubic meter of water.
This water shortage is one component of life under occupation for the residents of Nabi Saleh. Another is the constant attention of the IDF, which for the children of the village means they grow up encountering Israeli soldiers on a regular basis. On December 15th, one of these soldiers shot Ahed's cousin Mohammed in the head with a rubber bullet, and he went into a coma. Later that day, Ahed confronted two soldiers on her family's property and slapped one of them. Her mother, Nariman, took a video of the encounter, which went viral. On December 19th, Ahed was arrested.
Ahed was arrested firstly because she is a Palestinian. Because we are, as a Palestinian, our existence is part of the problem of our colonization and our occupier. Ahed slapped the soldier because he occupied our Palestine, because he represents the image of the crime, the image of suffering. He represents the image of occupier. He represents the soldier who killed her aunt 1993, or the soldier who shot and killed her uncle, or who shot Mustafa or Saba in front of her, who closed the gate, who stopped her in the checkpoint, who raided my home more than 200 times in this short period of time.
Bassem described the arrest.
They raided my home after midnight, and they arrested, and they took all our electronic devices from the house. They make the house upside down, and then they took my daughter. When my wife went to see and asked, where is she? Where is my daughter? They arrested my wife.
After Ahed was taken from their home,
they took her to the investigation. They, in the first 10 days, she was in a hard procedure of investigation. They isolate her, they put her in cells, they scared her, they threatened her, they don't allow her to sleep. They continue asking her around more than 14 hours. They give her arrest for just 1 hour, and they continue for also 14 hours. They put a lot of pressure psychologically in her to broke her, but she refused to collaborate with the investigation. They want to broke her, but she keep patient, keep strong, and this make them angry, and they make one of the charges that she don't collaborate with the investigation.
That was an interrogator yelling in Arabic that he will arrest people Ahed knows if she does not speak, naming them in front of her. Though Ahed's trial was set to begin on her 17th birthday, it was delayed several times. There was a legal battle over whether or not the trial would be open to the media. Ultimately, the trial remained closed, and Bassem said this was...
because they don't want it to be public, because they don't want to show the real face of this legal system. You can see everything in this court, just the justice that is not appear in this court, because 99.99% are all the time guilty. And this is a military court which is done or built by the legal system to punish the Palestinians. There is no relation between occupation and justice.
At the closed trial on March 21st, Ahed signed a plea deal in which she pled guilty to 4 of 12 charges in exchange for being sentenced to 8 months, given a fine, and a suspended sentence. Her previous time imprisoned will count towards the 8 months. This is the voice of Ahed Tamimi saying, quote, "There is no justice under occupation," as she leaves military court. Ahed was not the only member of her family impacted by the slap. Her mother, Nariman, was also arrested and imprisoned. In addition to paying a fine, she's now serving 8 months and has a suspended sentence. Ahed's cousin, Noor, who also is in the video, was detained and released on bail. She was fined and has a suspended sentence of 5 months. Living under occupation continues to impact the Tamimi family. They've endured multiple deaths, including Bassem's own sister. They remain at risk of arrest and detention, and Ahed's brother was arrested at the beginning of May, and her cousin Mohammed was arrested at the end of May. Bassem himself has been in prison 9 times and was an Amnesty International prisoner of conscience. I asked Bassem what gives him the strength and hope to continue to be an activist and share his story.
We are not dealing with our issue from our anger. We are a freedom fighter. We have a belief. Our duty and our responsibility is to resist. We can't keep silent under occupation. Nobody will respect us if we accept to keep silent under occupation. Our duty and responsibility and to struggle for our dignity and our freedom. Because we have a belief and we struggle for something deserved, and our homeland is deserved more than what we are doing. We are ready to pay the price for that.
A few important statistics to keep in mind. First, according to the Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem, 315 Palestinian children were in Israeli detention as of the end of April 2018. A note about this number. Israel does not differentiate between detained minors from East Jerusalem and from the rest of the West Bank. We won't be focusing on East Jerusalem in this episode, since Palestinians in East Jerusalem are subject to a different legal system. If you're interested in learning more about this, you'll find resources on our website. Second, there was a 95% conviction rate for children in the military court system, according to the most recent available data from 2015. Detention is a looming threat for children in the West Bank, and I wanted to go beyond these statistics. I wanted to find out, on what grounds are children arrested? What actually happens to a child once they've been arrested? And how does child detention impact both individuals and communities in the West Bank? To better understand this wide-reaching system, we spoke with Yazin Mekbil. Yazin spent his childhood in Beit Omar in the West Bank before moving to the United States for college. Today, he is a student and advocate against child detention and works closely with the organization Defense for Children International Palestine, or DCIP. Yazin said that while he was growing up,
There was always a threat that my mother reminded me every day. Yazin, go to school and come home. Don't interact with anyone. Don't talk to anyone, especially if there were clashes or if the Israeli army was arresting people more within that week or that month. And the reason was, you know, I don't want you to lose your future. So, you know, I grew up with that mentality of losing my future in a sense. And I discovered this when I came to the U.S., that I did not have a normal childhood at all. And I don't even think that what I, you know, the term childhood applies to Palestinian kids in general. So coming to the U.S. kind of made me realize a lot of things. And now also I'm realizing how privileged I am for not being detained.
Brad Parker, International Advocacy Officer and attorney at DCIP, explained the two systems of law that operate simultaneously but selectively in the West Bank.
So I think the situation, particularly in the West Bank, is just a clear situation of two separate laws for two separate people. In 1967, Israeli forces occupied the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip. And when they did so, they instituted military law. So what that means is a military commander has executive, judicial, legislative authority over the entire occupied territory. Palestinians don't have any sort of civil and political rights. They don't vote for individuals that create the laws. They don't vote for individuals to enforce the laws. Really, they have no say in the law that applies to them. So this has sort of been the basic structure, legal structure of the occupation, you know, for the past 50 plus years. And if you're an Israeli settler, an Israeli citizen living in the West Bank in a settlement, you have the benefit of Israeli civilian law. Israel chooses to apply Israeli civilian law to Israeli settlers, Israeli citizens, which comes with increased rights and protections compared to the military law.
The experience of detention for children depends on a variety of factors. There are several stages that are quote-unquote typical, though of course nothing is typical under military occupation. And from our conversations with Yazin and Brad, we tried to break a few of them down. To better understand this system, we'll begin with the arrest. This is Brad on what happens first.
The way it looks in practice is children are, you know, arrested from their homes in the middle of the night or, you know, on the streets during the day, mainly on suspicion. It's rare that there'll be a warrant issued or that there'll be some form of independent oversight or investigation where evidence is presented to a, you know, independent party or a judge and a warrant is issued. Really, soldiers arrest on suspicion. They don't have to be 100% sure, 20% sure, 10% sure. Really, just if they have a suspicion that an individual has violated one of the security offenses in the military law, that's enough to justify an arrest. And what we see in practice is that really, you know, should be used as an exception in legal systems that prioritize due process rights and fair trial protections. But that exception is really the norm in the Israeli military detention system.
Yazin said that for the first 2 to 3 days after the arrest, there is often little information available to the family and legal representation about the child's location.
And then after you're arrested, you would be transferred to a detention center or an interrogation center. So the physical abuse occurs during the transfer. So soldiers would be hitting you using their rifles. you might be placed on the floor of the military jeep, and during the transfer, they would be sitting on top of you.
After the transfer, the child is subject to interrogation.
In the 80s and 90s, my dad told me it was mostly physical. Nowadays, it's mostly psychological. So if you don't confess, we will do this, we will do that. And then playing all sorts of tricks with, again, young children who would believe anything.
For your close friends or for your cousins that you mentioned who have been detained, what was their treatment like while they were in detention?
So for all of them, they were abused when they were arrested. They suffered from some sort of an injury or pain. And then during prison, during interrogation, one of my cousins, they actually threatened him to, they put wires on his body and his private areas as well. And they told him, like, if you don't confess, if you don't give us what we're looking for, you will not be a man anymore. And that was in 2010. And my cousin was 14 years old.
So on average, how long, I mean, if there is an average, how long do children remain in detention, especially if they're not willing to sign a coerced confession?
In most cases, children do sign them. Now, if you don't sign and the Israeli military don't have anything against you, you'll be released probably within a week or 2 weeks. But again, you kind of became part of the system. So your name is in the system, let's say blacklisted. And then if you get stopped on a military checkpoint, and then they ask for your ID, and then, you know, it appears that you were detained, they might detain you again. In a lot of cases, if they don't have anything against you, no confessions, no pictures, you did not confess to anything, you did not sign anything, you'll be released within a week to 2 weeks.
Children are arrested based on kind of other statements from other children in interrogation, where a child doesn't have access to counsel, they haven't had a parent present. Children is essentially alone in that interrogation room. And one of the things that they're asked is who else in your neighborhood throws stones? So the interrogation turns into not just a base where evidence is created to then charge that child in the military courts, because there is no kind of independent oversight or evidence gathering prior to an arrest. But it also turns into an intelligence gathering exercise to then get additional names from Palestinian communities. So in those interrogations, children are pressured to give the names of other children or adults that are leading protests, weekly protests in different villages, and those names go on a list and sort of perpetuate the cycle of detention throughout the West Bank.
After the interrogation, the child can be transferred to a prison, either in the West Bank or inside of Israel. Transferring children to Israel requires crossing the Green Line. This violates international law, which states that occupied populations may only be detained and prosecuted within the occupied territory. This move also affects the child's family's ability to visit them, because it's incredibly difficult for Palestinians to get permits to cross the Green Line. In some cases, a child can be transferred across the Green Line even before interrogation, if the child is going to be placed in isolation.
The first interaction with your family would be actually in the first military court, which could be 3 months after your detention. So it's basically your parents only who can be present in the court. And then 3 months after your sentence, your parents can apply for a permit. And that's coordinated by the Red Cross for them to go and visit their children.
Despite an Israeli military order stating that juvenile military courts were to be created, Brad explained that this is not the reality on the ground. In addition, though Israel eventually raised the age of majority to 18, children are still tried and sentenced as adults.
In practice, you know, there were no new military or juvenile military courts. You know, there's no new infrastructure, no new staff, and it's not even clear what the training would be for the judges that deal with juvenile cases. I've gone to offer military court and with my colleagues on the ground to observe hearings of children detained and prosecuted there. And you can ask the court staff, you know, where is the juvenile military court? And they have no idea what you're talking about.
When a child is prosecuted under military law in the West Bank, the most pertinent military order is Military Order 1651, also called the, quote, Order Regarding Security Provisions.
It looks similar to a criminal code, you know, we'd see here in the U.S. or in other jurisdictions, but it also includes more political offenses or occupation-related offenses, you could say. So you'll see homicide, assault, kind of things that we're familiar with, but then throwing stones is a specific charge under the military law. So children that throw a stone towards the separation wall, the big concrete barrier that sort of snakes around in and out of the borders of the West Bank, that carries a potential maximum sentence of 10 years under military law. And so the recent case of Ahed Tamimi, where she was arrested, detained, and one of the, I think, 12 charges or, you know, multiple charges were throwing stones. So that's you know, actually a charge under military law. And it's important to sort of note that it's not about causing any damage or having any impact whatsoever. It really is criminalizing the act of throwing the stone. So you don't even hit the wall. You don't cause any damage. To give a sense of the reach of military law, there's sort of a specific section around conduct towards soldiers. So I think there's a couple different degrees of charges in this section. The highest degree is, I think, assaulting a soldier comes with a 7 or 10 year maximum sentence. And then the lesser charge is insulting the honor of a soldier, which comes with a potential 1 year maximum sentence. And I think that's, you know, that as a lawyer, as somebody looking at the military law, that charge I think always sort of stands out to me because it's so subjective and really a person would have no idea what insulting the honor of a soldier means. Is it walking through a checkpoint and not giving your ID fast enough? Is it walking through a checkpoint and smiling at the soldier? It really could be interpreted and taken in completely different ways in different contexts. And that's essentially the thing to take away from the military law is that Palestinians can be arrested for anything. And there's sort of a charge in the military law that would justify the arrest.
The majority of cases result in a plea deal. Brad explained that though a plea deal can move a child through the system faster, it can have lasting consequences. He described the plea deal in the Ahed Tamimi case.
The plea bargain and the plea deal that was announced, really, this is the process that everybody watched Ahed go through. This is the norm for children in the military courts. You know, they're arrested in the middle of the night from their family home, interrogated. They appear in a military court. Their detention is extended until the end of legal proceedings, right? So their pretrial detention is the norm. Bail is rarely granted. Then you'll see kind of a series of court hearings where not much happens. And then, you know, eventually a lawyer representing the child is, you know, comes to the conclusion and determines that the fastest way to get this child removed from this situation is to accept a plea deal that's offered by the military prosecutor. And that's essentially the norm. What you're fighting against, if you want to fight the charges, is a process in a military court system that's completely unjust. You know, if Ahed wanted to fight these charges, she'd likely be in pretrial detention for a year, maybe even 2 years before there's ever a trial. And so DCI Palestine, we have lawyers that represent kids in the military courts. I think from 2012 to 2015, we had, I think, 297 cases that we closed in that period. In 295 of those cases, they resulted in plea deals. And that's, you know, 99% of cases. That's the norm. I think it's extremely rare that a child is acquitted or there's a trial at all. The system is built around plea bargains and it's rigged in Israel's favor because they control all the rules. Military court judges are active duty or reserve duty officers in the Israeli military. These are not independent and impartial courts. These are part of the occupation infrastructure established and built to maintain control of Palestinian populations.
Brad walked me through the components of Ahed's sentence, which in addition to the sentence and the fine, also includes a suspended sentence.
So I think she received an 8-month suspended sentence for a period of 3 years. So what that means is essentially for the next 3 years, once she's released, she has a probationary period where if she's charged with any of those offenses that she pled guilty to, she'll automatically serve another 8 months. So in the U.S., and you know, we're used to this idea of juvenile offenders, they can get their records expunged when they turn 18 and essentially have a clean slate, and things that they did when they're not adults don't sort of stay with them. With the suspended sentence, it'll take her past her 18th birthday. I think she'll be 20 or 21 when it finally would expire. But that's a really significant thing. Like, in addition to, you know, having pled guilty to charges in the military court, which will affect her ability to travel internationally, internally within the West Bank through checkpoints and sort of a whole range of things, these suspended sentences are really the thing that also kind of work to control Palestinian youth and families as well. Because the Israeli military authorities have that sort of always hanging over her, you know, for the next 3 years. And it's not uncommon that children are rearrested and serve more time, and then that extended or that suspended sentence sort of period keeps getting extended.
Once a child is released, the ordeal of detention is far from over. The re-entry process back into their communities is extremely difficult.
It is a systematic destruction of the Palestinian society. Because once you take the child out of their environment, out of their school, out of what they're used to do, and you throw them into jail, even if they haven't been thinking about throwing stones and doing any kind of any work that would be considered a threat to the Israeli army or any work that is considered a terrorist act, they will start thinking about those things once they leave prison. For my cousins, after they were released from prison, that they were completely out of it. They're not interested in any kind of what they call childish stuff. All of them started smoking. They don't want to play soccer anymore. Two of them dropped out of school. And, you know, like, this is not the Ibrahim I know. This is not Anas that I know. This is the Muhammad that I know. So it totally changed who they are. And it made them other people that I don't really know. Most children do drop out of school. So the child that had the dream of becoming a doctor, professor, a teacher, they don't have the dream anymore. As a child, you come out of prison considering yourself a man and you want to behave as a man. So this creates, in so many cases that I know of, it created conflicts within the family itself.
I asked Yazin about the other impacts detention can have, especially on employment, education, and freedom of movement.
Once you are detained, once you are, let's say, blacklisted, you are a security threat right away, which means that any interaction with any Israeli is not allowed anymore. So you can't have permits to go to Jerusalem, whether to work or just to visit or for hospitals or anything. So you can't have that permit. When you're traveling on an Israeli road, and let's say there is a military checkpoint on any road or a town entrance or something, you would be at least detained and questioned. They would ask you, where you're going? Where did you go? Just to out of intimidation or out of, you know, we're watching you. So be careful.
Though Yazin was never held in detention, he shared an unnerving experience he had several years ago in Beit Omar. While he was studying late at night for exams, he heard the sounds of Israeli military activity, including tear gas grenades.
I didn't pay a lot of attention to it because it was something normal.
But the next day after his exam,
my dad told me that the Israeli army went to my grandfather's house and they destroyed all the furniture looking for me and for my brother. It was a shock, honestly, because I was never involved in any protests, in stone throwing, in any thing that would really put me on the blacklist, let's say, or put me under the radar of the Israeli army. I've been a typical nerdy student, mostly studying all the time. And it kind of seemed that whatever you do, whether you throw stones, you don't throw stones, you study hard, you don't study at all, you will be a target at some point. And I remember sleeping for a whole week, wearing my shoes, my jacket, everything, in kind of anticipating that the army will show up at any moment and arrest me.
Though according to DCIP, there are approximately 500 to 700 children detained a year, Brad explained that the number was imprecise because of less formal detentions that remain uncounted.
They don't get prosecuted in the military court. They don't get held in Afar military prison or a Megiddo military prison. So they don't sort of get reflected in the numbers. So military law sets the age of criminal responsibility at 12 years old. So the military courts have jurisdiction over any person 12 years and older. So what it means if you're an 11-year-old going through a checkpoint in Hebron and you're pulled aside, questioned in a container for several hours, maybe questioned overnight and then released later, that type of detention doesn't necessarily come up in those figures.
I asked Brad what international law says about the system of child detention in the West Bank.
The Convention on the Rights of the Child is sort of the primary international law document that sets norms specific to Palestinian or to children's rights generally. And what that sets out is that detention must be used as a last resort for the shortest period of time possible. And the underlying principle behind that is that everything must be done in the best interest of the child. So Israel has ratified the Convention on the Rights of the Child. They've ratified all of the major international human rights treaties. Other protections that are included in the Convention on the Rights of the Child include the absolute prohibition against torture, ill treatment, but also focuses also on due process protections, the right to access to an attorney, right to have prompt hearing, kind of all of the things that we sort of take for granted in an American system under our constitutional protections. So in the military court system, these are essentially all of the rights that are denied to children on a systematic basis. The military law provides no right to counsel during interrogations. And so kids have no attorneys present during interrogation. That's the norm. That's the law. That's not something that sort of just happens in practice. Even though there's absolute prohibition against torture, ill treatment, we see that around 72 to 75% of children experience some form of physical violence after arrest. So this sort of shows, I think, the way that military law is used and the way that the military courts are used and the way that children encounter the military courts, there really is nothing, they have nothing to do with justice. These courts are really a legal tool used to implement an occupation and to control populations. And I think the fact that Israel has just persistently failed to provide protections and provide rights and completely disregards international law really shows the goal behind the military court system and the arrest of children.
A few days after our initial conversation, we spoke again with Bassem Tamimi, who you heard from at the beginning of this episode. Ahed's story has inspired protests and conversations about the role of child detention as a tool of occupation. I asked Bassem to speak about his teenage daughter becoming a symbol of defiance.
It's very important that she become a symbol because she represents the Palestinian issue. And she became the face of the Palestinian children. And she also become the symbol of the humanity in all over the world. She became an icon like Che Guevara and everyone know Ahed Tamimi representing the Palestinian, the struggle of the Palestinian in front of the Israeli occupation. And also, but also in other hands, she lose her childhood because she become responsible for something we are responsible for, not the children. And this means that she will lose a lot of her childhood because this responsibility.
Thank you.
So I want everybody to know really that, you know, these are children. No matter what you do as a child, you're not really at a level that helps you to think about your actions. You're mostly doing it for the fun of it. You're maybe trying to grab the attention of a girl you like. You know, it's good. Children are being children at all times, whether you live under occupation or not. If every time a child does something, we detain them, we destroy their future, and we make them basically dreamless young men. This is how Palestinian children who go through the system become. So I just want everyone to know that Ahed Tamimi is just one number out of thousands of Palestinian children who are arrested and are arrested on a daily basis.
Ahed is now completing the rest of her prison time. Though she asked for an early release at the beginning of June, it was denied. Advocates and policymakers are continuing to push for an end to child detention. DCIP is currently running the No Way to Treat a Child campaign and are advocating for a bill sponsored by Representative Betty McCollum. The bill seeks to certify that U.S. money is not going towards the, quote, military detention, interrogation, abuse, or ill treatment of Palestinian children. As we were preparing to release this episode, we learned that another member of the Tamimi family was shot and killed by the IDF, 21-year-old Izzedine Tamimi. To learn more about the recent legislation and data referenced in this episode, go to our website, unsettledpod.com. This episode was produced and edited by myself and Asaf Calderon. Unsettled is produced by Yoshi Fields, Max Friedman, Asaf Calderon, Alana Levinson, and Emily Bell. Music by Mon Placier. Special thanks to Nat Rosenzweig for the theme music. Clips of Ahed Tamimi's interrogation and in court from Middle East Monitor and I-24 News. Make sure to follow Unsettled on social media. You'll find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you never miss an episode of Unsettled.